We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a strike! What a screamer! Zola! And a fantastic goal! Oscar back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Xhaka collapses under the weight of Clive's praise and expectations. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right. It was a Xhaka disaster class, weighed down by the heavy expectations of a future captaincy as placed upon him by Clive. Once Clive turns his eye towards you, much like Sauron, your life is left in the wreckage, and now we have nothing but a shattered Granit Xhaka to pick up and hopefully rebuild so that he can somehow contribute to the rest of our season. We will discuss that and more from the 1-1 draw against Wolves with Paul. You can find him on Twitter at PausNewMyPants. Hello, Paus.
Woohoo! It was a Xhaka-lamity.
Shakalamity. I like it. It was a grandtastic disaster. Grandaster? I don't know. Anyway, Clive's on Twitter at ClivePAFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello. And I tell you who won't be captain, and that's Kolasinac.
Oh,
I'm going to say for now.
You know who won't also is Granit Xhaka, but we'll get to that. let's talk about this game. But before we do, Scott will be here with a statistical analysis of the match later on. You'll also be hearing about our friends at EnclosedLingerie.com, so you don't want to miss that. That will certainly be the most exciting part of the podcast, literally and figuratively. But for now, let's start, unfortunately, with another draw, a draw that I don't think anybody's going to be rewatching, although I imagine Paul did somehow or another. Paul, on second watching, did it get any better?
A bit.
All right. But, yeah. I don't care. The lineup, I have to admit. So, look, I thought we were going to smash Wolves, and it's not like me to be a Pollyanna. Like, I'm not just dismissing them because they're Wolves. I realize where they are on the table, but they were coming off three consecutive losses, and it wasn't like they were losing to Pep's Barcelona either. I mean, they had lost to, who was it? Let's see. Let's make sure I get this completely right. They had lost to Tottenham in a game where, to be fair, Tottenham weren't very good, but it was at home. They lost away to Brighton. They lost at home to Watford, 2-0. So, you know, not coming off the best form. They do like to go with that three at the back. I thought we'd be able to pick that apart based on how we performed against three at the back in the past. And I have to admit, I kind of like the lineup. I guess the only real decision it seems like Emery has to make at the moment is what to do with that right forward position. And he went with Iwobi in his less favored spot instead of Mkhitaryan. Overall, how did you feel, you know, at the start of the match?
Moi?
Yeah, you. Toi.
Moi.
Toi. Okay.
I thought the lineup was pretty good, probably as good as it was going to get. I do tend to favor seeing Mkhitaryan, though he has been out of sorts over on that right wing, just because I haven't seen us get a lot going on the wings. And he formed the best partnership with Bellerin. And I still suspect Iwobi's better from the left. I guess we'll get into that. But he still needs to come to terms with our best front three. And maybe Liverpool was a bit of a false read for these kinds of games, because they came out and played. And when we still need to crack the safe, then we need to be a very efficient up front, and we don't have a lot of width besides getting Bellerin forward. It seems to be our one trick in terms of width for people who stay compact. So I think overall I like the lineup, but my one concern was where do we get some trickery and get somebody in behind in the front three?
It's a big miss. It is a big, big miss. And I think the problem you have right now is you've got a very low-touch player in Aubameyang playing in a position that he looked, I think, even more lost in this game than he has in recent games. I mean, I don't think he's ever been fantastic there, but he looked really particularly lost. It didn't help Kolasinac at all, who was a mess himself. I think that whole left side was a real problem. And as a result, ball progression was just sort of stale and slow. I mean, Clive, I hate to go with things like lack of intensity, lack of drive, but comparing it to the Liverpool game, and I realize Liverpool came to play a little more, maybe not as much as expected, but a little more than Wolves did. But there is something wrong with the way we're progressing the ball through midfield right now. And to me, it's so ponderous, and it really creates very little difficulty for the opposition to just keep us passing it back and forth between the back line in the midfield and the back line in the midfield. For you, where do you think the ball progression is short-circuiting right now?
You touched on it there a little bit. And I think what we've really enjoyed this season has been the increased intensity, the increased kilometres, and people being more direct and playing what they see, right? So I don't think, you know, sometimes we react very well when other people have got the ball, so we can pass through them. We create some depth in our teams. We can go the full length of the pitch. And it's very pleasing on the eye. And then you get a situation like at the weekend where walls are quite tight, quite compact, and try to send us down certain channels. And I think, you know, a game I didn't see live. I watched it afterwards. And the first thing that jumped out of the screen to me was we looked tired, ponderous, and slower than we have had at any time this season. Even in the poor first half performances, they've been poor, but we've had a level of pizzazz about us. I haven't noticed, we may have given up chances, but we've had a level of pace and a level of intensity. But I felt, especially in the first half, we were very slow in everything we did. We weren't as instant. And, you know, the goal is a classic example of not doing things quickly, not passing appropriately with the right messages on it. And also, there were many occurrences when we were passing with too many messages on it. And so those passes could be cut out and read. And that all comes from that half a second dancing around the ball, not punching the pass as we were early in the season. And I've got to be honest with you, I just thought we looked a little bit tired. And when you're a little bit tired and not as sharp as you normally are mentally, what happens is you just hang on to your technique a little bit longer, and the whole flow and progression then disappeared. And that's what leapt out of the screen to me. And, it's one of those games when I actually thought, wow, we don't look very good. You know, it's the first time. It's probably, for me, it's the worst performance of the season that we managed to salvage something from. I didn't think Wolves were fantastic. I thought they were organised. But any team just paying another 2 out of 10 more than what we did at the weekend, we would have taken them. So I'm quite disappointed in the overall game shape. But it happens, right? And we didn't lose. So that's the positive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the positive is taking a point from a game where you were this poor. But I think the scary thing about being this poor is I see elements of this poor performance that have been sprinkled throughout this run. I mean, if you take chain, look, the results have probably been better to this point than I might have expected with a change of manager in the team that we have. Unfortunately, if you put the results aside just for 1 second, and I'm not trying to say that that's not the point of the football match, I realize the result is what matters, but there are performances like this sprinkled throughout, especially first halves. And I wonder, Paul, if if we're seeing, you know, I want to get to the individual performances in a moment, and certainly Shaka's errors and Kolasinac and Mustafi. There's a lot of players there that I think we have to ask questions about. But let me ask you this. At this point in the season, we're into November. It takes a lot more than one season for a coach to really put their fingerprints on a team, to imprint their plan and their strategy. But I'm still struggling to see Emery's plan taking a clear hold in a way that suggests to me that we are going to be able to regularly show up and create problems for lower class opposition. We've gotten away with it. We've had some good second halves, but we are, I believe, being outscored on XG for the season overall, and we're about mid-table there. We're making a lot of mistakes. This was one of those games where the opposition sat back, didn't really have much interest in playing the football. We couldn't solve that problem, and they looked dangerous every time they countered us. So, I mean, do you feel that this game is maybe just a continuing concern that whatever the strategy is, that it's not really taking shape yet?
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I think teams that sit back like this don't really give Emery's new paradigm a chance to shine, because they kind of let us play the first ball out from the back. So there was no real opportunity to kind of develop play with some trickery from the back. They kind of just let us have our half to play out of. And so you don't see much in that half of the field. I mean, Leno's looking very good in his distribution and his throws. He's very, very quick to get us started. But then if they've dropped off, it's kind of, so what? They've given us that half. And then they've sat back the other half, very compact, very disciplined. So we're not going to get a chance to, given that we're not highly proactive on the front press, on the counter press, we are against the big teams, as it turns out, the big three maybe we've played so far. But other teams, we don't particularly do anything special in terms of pressing there or in the midfield. So it's kind of hard to see what's so special in this formula in it, against a team like Wolves. And the one thing I might digress a little bit or diverge a little bit from Clive on is I think Wolves were a particularly good example of the teams we've played so far. I think they were unusually compact and unusually effective. I don't think we should have them down as just one more team. I think they did a superb job to the point where they stifled our midfield, where Lacazette normally drops deep and has an impact and can get that extra ball in or win a ball back. I mean, we didn't get a bloody thing from them down the middle, and they left us the wings. I think they did that better than almost any team has this year. And then, you know, they were looking to hit us on the counter, and unfortunately, we provided them that goal, that one blip from Xhaka. I agree we didn't move the ball very quickly, which should be an Emery trademark of us moving the ball. We did look a little sluggish. I thought the individual performances generally were mostly okay. Xhaka's error aside, and Kolasinac being shite, and maybe he's been brought back a little too early because we didn't really have any other options. Outside of him, I think everybody else did okay. It's not that anybody had an absolute stinker. I think they all actually played reasonably well. Wolves were particularly good at nullifying us, and we didn't come up with anything special. We didn't have a great moment from any individual player, a Xhaka free kick, or whatever, to get us fired up and get us started. We were just kind of, we started okay, but got stifled and moved backwards. So,
well,
it was just a frustrating game.
And let me say this: I actually thought once we got the ball into the attacking third, we looked like we could potentially cause them problems. For me, the problem is happening further back. It's progressing the ball into the final third entries. We're not getting the ball up the pitch with intention and urgency in a way where we can create attacks easily, where we can facilitate those dangerous final third possessions. And I realized, look, we had the lion's share of the ball, more than the lion's share. I think we completed 630-something passes. I mean, we had 70% of the possession, 72%. But a lot of that possession was in the midfield third or the defensive third, and we just seem to be slow to progress the ball up the pitch. And a lot of it winds up going through the fullbacks, and especially on the left-hand side, because Xhaka gets the ball. He gives it to the left wing back, or to Ozil, who gives it, you know, to Oba. And Aubameyang is not a good fit for that position. I mean, I love that player, but I'm really, really starting to be concerned that even with his 7 goals, which is astonishing, he is holding us back at this point. That a Iwobi on the left there and a Ramsey or Mkhitaryan on the right would have given us more access to the final third, more ability to carry the ball through the middle third and into the final third. We just don't have a lot of people that are dangerous on the ball at the moment. And so it's very easy to clog the passing lanes, to put numbers between, you know, between the ball and the final third and keep us out. And Clive, this is the problem, too. When you play smaller teams that are fine being resolute, fine sitting back, that don't want the ball, that don't want to give you opportunities to press them, give you opportunities to create transitions, then the one thing you can't do is concede first, right? I mean, the one good thing in this run, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, is when we played poorly, we haven't fallen behind, right? And I realize we did against Liverpool, but I mean, against these small teams, you fall behind and you give them something to hold on to. And then you push forward and you give them the chance to really counter into those spaces. And we saw that in the second half of this game. So to me, the first job, if you're going to be a little less dynamic in attack, is you can't concede first. You have to have a chance to score first. And once you score first against a small team, you know, you make your life a lot easier because they open up. So it's the errors by Granit Xhaka. It's the errors by Mustafi. It's the errors by Kolasinac that become a big, big problem. And 7 a.m. kickoff posted something on the ArsenalReview.com that I think is required reading, just talking about what a sloppy, error-prone team we are and why there is cause for concern here. And I'm not trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater, by the way. I realize it's a process, but I think we should at least focus on this. For example, 17 combined errors, penalties, and own goals conceded by Arsenal in the first 18 matches this season. To make that clear, quote, in league play alone, Arsenal have more errors this season than any other team in the top 5 European leagues. Okay? As a result, we've allowed 25 big chances. Okay? 25 big chances puts us 15th in the league in big chances allowed. And this is really the problem for me. You know, you praise Xhaka, rightly so, for his performance against Liverpool, but he is too easily able to turn that focus and intensity off and make errors that, for me, are errors of concentration, not skill. Look, Xhaka is not a quick-footed player. He's not a pacey player. He's someone who can distribute long. He can pass the ball well, but he has physical limitations. What worries me are the mental limitations, because he doesn't just let the ball go under his foot to start the attack that leads to the goal. He gets rinsed on the give and go. So for you, someone who likes Xhaka, and I like some skills of his, and who thinks he could potentially be a captain, I totally understand why you might say that, but mental lapses like this can't be tolerated in that position of the pitch. Is that really the issue for him, concentration?
No, not really. It's just
what is it that he's made more errors than any player.
Let me tell you what happened on that goal. Right?
Bad
things. So when you pass to somebody, right, you should normally go to what they call safe side. Right? So Xhaka's safe side is to his left side, furthest away from the player. Right? Kolasinac dances round it, delays his pass, and then passes it to his weak side, the side just nearer the player. Mm-hmm. Xhaka's instinct is, well, you know I'm left-footed, mate. Pop it on there, and I can get it straight round the corner. If you pop it to my right side, you must have seen something behind me. All right, so I'm going to let it go. That was a gamble. This was not a miscontrol. He's thinking that pass has come to him, and he's put it in there. So that can't be where... He knows I don't want it there. I want on my left foot so I can move it first time. And at this level, that level of pass appreciation is natural. If you do that in training drills and you go to the wrong side, whistle goes, you get a rollicking, right? So that's what happens in the pattern play. That's not how it works. So that's a poor pass in the first place. Now, you could say he should be aware of what's behind him. If he didn't hear a call, why is he letting it go? A square ball in midfield is death by a thousand cuts, right? You don't do that. So maybe he should have owned the ball, but he probably felt there was someone behind him, and they go inside, they pop round him. The pop round him bit, come on, guys, we know what he is. And as we spoke extensively about having a defensive player around him to help him on the defensive side, and he's used far more on the progression side, and he has good defensive days. So it's nothing new here, right? The mistake was on the pass, and on the appreciation of the pass, and his appreciation of what the pass was actually meant for. That's where we go. Now, if you ask me about, you know, concerns, and I'm far more concerned about our left-back situation, because since we've lost Monreal, we've lost a lot of rhythm in this team, and fullbacks are key, and Kolasinac is a player that has no track record of really strong performances more than in his first month.
He's a disaster. Here. Yes, I agree with that. I don't know why we bought, or we didn't buy him. We got him for free. Maybe that's why we got him.
Yeah, and it's not working out. And I don't see a player with a strong mentality. I see a player that always wants to come off. He doesn't complete games. He's always struggling physically. He's good at doing what he likes to do, which is run forward and create. He's got ballet feet for feet, and he's got a bricklayer's body upper half. He's a unique sort of player, right? But I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he's good enough for Arsenal. We've got a problem there. We've got a major problem. Now, I think we can all agree that Xhaka's good enough. Some people think he's better than others, but I think he's more than good enough. And that's what the problem is. And I think what we're seeing here with the XG numbers, and what we're seeing is the underlying. The underlying says we are the fifth best team in the country. That's what the numbers say. And that's exactly where we are. And that's where we're projected to finish. Right. So, and what he has done with this run is actually exceeded expectations on a results perspective with our efficiency in the penalty area and our improved efficiency in our penalty area not to concede goals. But there comes a point in time when you start to see the limitations of the players that we have. When you are playing above yourself and getting above yourself results, every now and again you come up against somebody that will expose your weaknesses. And I thought Wolves were quite smart. They've recognised that Arsenal have improved off the ball. We are now creating transitions and we are now ripping teams apart. So what Wolves said was, we don't want the ball. Let's watch Arsenal make mistakes, and we will set our speed system away on them and test their foot speed running backwards 3 days after a European game. I know there's lots of changes, but it's still relevant. And that's what's happening. People are now getting data on us, and we're going to have to react to that. Now, your point about how we play and progression, what this has highlighted is when a team sits in, we start to recognise what we don't have. We don't have enough dribblers in the team, right? So so now you start to see how you build your squad, what's missing. We don't have, you know, we don't have enough left-footed dribbling power and running speed. We don't have it, right? So that's what we need to add. We absolutely do need to add it. Whatever you say about Reece Nelson or the rest, we do not have that left-footed flyer, fast firing forward that can really dribble with the ball and cause problems. So when we have a team that sits in, we still have a plan to go to. We don't have that at the moment. So we have to find other ways. We're doing that with overlapping. We're doing that with penetrative fullbacks. But I thought this game was a real lesson. Teams are going to start watching us now and re-respecting us. The teams that are in the season just said, it's Arsenal, let's go and play them. And they recognise that we don't mind that. We can play better off the ball. But now teams are going to sit in, and we've got a challenge. And players like Iwobi are going to be incredibly valuable. And other players who maybe need the game, need a fight, need the opposition to fight them, maybe like Aubameyang does, they're going to find themselves potentially marginalised if teams do start to over-respect us and sit in.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw that. Look, I will take issue, not take issue, that's the wrong way to say it. I have to disagree. I don't know that I believe Xhaka is good enough for our ultimate ambitions. I think Xhaka is a player with a lot of positive qualities. And look, the guy completed about 100 passes at a 90% clip on the day. I mean, it's not like all he did was concede a goal and screw up. I think he's limited. And I'm not convinced that he can get the errors out of his game. And I take your point. The ball was given to his wrong foot. You're right. And he left it. And he was not given the pass he should have been from Kolasinac. I still think...
Does he have a lot of errors in his game?
Well, I mean, he has committed the most errors of any player in the Premier League since he arrived. So
I don't really know what that means. I mean, I'm watching them.
The most, there was a big error statistically in this game, the most errors committed by any player in the Premier League since he arrived. That's, you know, I mean, okay, you can take issue with
that. Is that leading to goals?
It's, they are considered errors, and I think statistically an error leads to a big chance or a goal or a penalty, something like that. So I have to admit, I don't know the exact statistic.
Okay, well, that's you know what? Considering he is our main point of reference to start our attacks, he's the player that every team would want to go and press because he's the one that progresses the ball more than anybody else. In a team that's possession-based, that statistic doesn't surprise me 1,000%.
It does look to me that teams, and even against Wolves, I think Wolves targeted him and Kolasinac because they recognized that they could be taken advantage of in two different ways. I mean, look, Kolasinac routinely plays 75-76%.
Really targeted there. He just let the
not there. I mean, throughout the game, I mean, they put him under a little more pressure because Shaq is a guy that if you give him
the game, I didn't. You know, the reason I just don't think it's been a big factor in our season. I agree he is targeted, and I agree we have struggled to play under pressure. But I don't think that wasn't our problem here in this game. It was the one mistake, which was catastrophic for the result. And outside of that, I thought he was okay.
All right. I mean, look, we can agree to see it a little differently. It's not that I thought. You know, granted, Xhaka has the ability to play a high volume of passes forward, breaking lines. I mean, he can do that. And if you give him space, he will pick long balls, he will pick forward passes, and he will pick them at a high velocity, high volume throughout the game. I get that. I think his one-footedness, his slowness of movement, his maybe slowness of thought to read the game in front of him, those are all things that are a concern to me. I'm not saying he's a bad player. The question for me is, can a double pivot that he's in really reach the highest level of English football? And I don't know. I watch Torreira, and Torreira does not have the progressive passing Xhaka has, but I watch the way he reads the game, the quickness with which he moves the ball, the quickness of his feet, and I'd love to have something more akin to that alongside him. You know, maybe that's not what's needed. We'll find out. I mean, over time, we'll find out. But, Paul, I think, you know, the question for me then is, I totally agree with you about dribblers. I think that when you look at someone like an Eden Hazard at Chelsea, when the team sits back, beating a guy off the dribble forces them to reshuffle their entire structure, and that creates openings. And we don't have anyone to prize those openings right now. And one of the reasons for that is we've got a low-touch player like Aubameyang, who to me looks increasingly like an expensive Theo Walcott in this role. I just thought that this was his poorest game for us since he's arrived. And by the way, if you're new to listening to this podcast, you know I adore him. I think he should be our starting center forward. This is one of my favorite players. It pains me to say this, but for you, was Aubameyang just clearly ill-fitted to the role he was given in this game, and is it increasingly looking like time for the manager to just pick one or the other at center forward?
It's this gray zone at the moment where it's almost good enough, but I think in the end the truth will out, because this is not an optimum setup, and we do have a dribbler. It's a Wobi. The question is, is he good enough? He's good, but is he good enough? Is he a difference maker in a game like this? It turns out he wasn't. Aubameyang, I thought, had one of his better first halves in terms of involvement, in terms of busyness. The breakdown did a good section on this. He was extremely quiet in the second half, but he didn't give Kolasinac any cover in the first half despite being pretty busy. And everything's just a little bit off with it. I mean, on a good day, we got two goal scorers through the center and up the left, but they're also our only goal scorers, it would seem. When you look at City's front five or six, they've probably got, you know, four or five healthy goal scorers in there. We've really only got two in the team now that Danny's gone. No matter what you say about his conversion rate, he actually clocks up goals as time goes on, whether it's bundling them in or just been the tallest guy in the box or something. He gets his goals, and now he's gone. And there we are. We've got our two goal scorers on the field, nobody on the bench. And when 60 or 70 minutes comes by, there's no way to switch it up with fresh legs. They're both already on there. And I don't think this is sustainable for the long term. I don't know what the answer is because we don't have anybody else. And if you take Aubameyang off, you're left one goal scorer on the pitch. I mean, you go around City's team, they got, you know, we know who the players are, Sterling, Sané, Jesus, Aguero, David Silva, Bernardo Silva, and Kevin De Bruyne, who's our Ozil, you could argue our Ozil equivalent, and Ozil scored a few, but it's not really his propensity to go after the goals. And so I think it's quite the conundrum that both our goal scorers are playing, and one of them's, you know, Aubameyang's probably okay playing from the left when he's scoring goals, but in a game where he doesn't score any goals, he's got to be incredibly dissatisfied. He doesn't get his goal, and the game's not much fun for him, and it's not playing to his strengths. Yeah. So something's got to give with the front three. And I'd like to have seen Mkhitaryan, because maybe him and Bellerin could have had success down the right, seeing as they were coming down our left, and could have got Aubameyang on the end of it coming into the center. But we needed to do something, and I think it was Mkhitaryan a lot earlier. We did an interesting tweak at halftime, which I'm sure we'll get into with the midfield.
Look, I feel for Emery. I want to be clear about this. I don't think Emery's system is working, and I don't think the way we build play is leveraging our best talent effectively enough right now, which is kind of an interesting complaint from a team that scored quite a few and whose problem comes from defensive errors. I understand that. But, you know, we've seen a lot of these sort of soporific first halves where the buildup just isn't working. But I feel for him because every really talented player in the whole fucking team is either an 8, 9, or 10. And you can't play 11, 8, 9s, and 10s. So he's got Aubameyang out of position, or he's got Ramsey out of position.
We had to go at it in the second half.
Well, we did try that. I know, yeah. We played, you know, two up front. We played in a couple of 10s. But, I mean, you know, is Ramsey an undeniably talented player? Yes. The system doesn't allow for him. Is Ozil an undeniably talented player? Yes. Mm. He looks ill-fitted in the system. Is Aubameyang an undeniably talented player? Yes. But he's not a left wing. And, by the way, you know, talking about Aubameyang's contribution, He played 17 passes. I want to make sure I get the number right, because I don't want to misquote a statistic, because statistics should at least be accurate. So let's get this right. 19 completed passes in a game. Iwobi completed 27 and a half, and he did it at 76% clip. That's one of your forwards who's supposed to be integral to build up. We built up a lot down the left. Kolasinac touched a lot. Xhaka touched it a lot. Ozil touched it a lot. And there's Aubameyang playing 19 completed passes in a whole game. I just think that short circuits your buildup a little bit. And then, of course, he did get a big chance, which is the thing you say about him. You say, for all of whatever you think of him, he can ghost into positions to score goals, and that's why he's got 7 this season. So it was really disappointing for him to miss that. But, Clive, you're chomping at the bit, so why don't you come back in?
Yeah, well, it is what it is, right? We've got Ozil and Iwobi. They are high-touch players that go to the ball to create, to move the ball. They are attacking midfielders. And Aubameyang is a striker, forward, final touch player that starts from the left. He's not meant to be part of our build-up. He's meant to be a decoy in our build-up, to pin people, to hold people to a spot so we can overload around them and get Kolasinac in. His job is to stand between the fullback and the centre-half, starting from the left-hand side. Do a bit of recovery, but also make sure you connect to Lacazette when you can and get in on the back stick when Bellerin crosses the ball, and be active in the box, which he always is. So we have to accept that's what he is. He is a Theo Walcott upgrade. He can do a lot more outside the box, and he sees things a bit more early, and he's had more time at centre forward, so he's a lot more experienced. I hear people say the Emery system is not working, I can barely keep myself quiet, right? Because in this game alone, we saw three different formations, right? So when people say the Emery system, what is that? What do they mean, right? We have to turn our minds away from a system and a formation and a way of playing, and just say that we are different off the ball. We have different components in centre midfield. We travel from back to front a lot more than we used to in certain games when teams come and press us, right? So what I like about this coach is he sees every game as a blank sheet of paper, right? He may have a base formation of a 4-2-3-1, but it can change really, really quickly. And if he fancies it on the day, he can go another way based on inputs and data and how he wants to approach your position. I'm not expecting a system. What I am expecting are more rounded players, improved players to come in that allows him him to answer more problems and questions being put to him on the pitch without having to make a raft of substitutions. That's what I expect to see happen. I know earlier you were focusing on Xhaka a bit, and I understand that. It's no problem. But trust me, this team's got bigger issues than Granit Xhaka.
Oh, sure. No, right? I totally Amen. Concede that. Look, let me just break in for 1 second to be clear. I do not think Granit Xhaka is the biggest problem with Arsenal in the sense of players that are ill-fitted or a struggle to utilize successfully. I think the problem is that Granit Xhaka is playing one of, if not the most important positions on the pitch in the way we build play right now. So he's going to get a lot of attention for that. And the question is, can he be at the level regularly that a player of that responsibility needs to be? Don't get me wrong. There were a lot of anonymous performances yesterday, a lot of subpar performances, and I don't think Shaq is nearly alone in that. I just think given the way he plays and the way we play through him, there's a lot of dependency on him being at his best.
Yeah, and I think he holds the record for the most continuous Premiership appearances. It's in the low 60s now, I believe, which means he's played every game for the last couple of seasons nearly, right? So he's going to have high numbers, he's going to have high mistakes, everything's going to be high. And for me, he's a major player. But what this game really highlighted to me was there are players sometimes you need to step up when other players are inconsistent. You know, for what we're saying about Aubameyang, I think he's the league's top scorer, or very close to it. He's definitely our top scorer. So he can produce. He didn't have a good day, and I thought his finish was very lackadaisical. Lacazette's got his fair share of goals. We've had one sparkling performance from Ozil. I haven't seen much else since then. And I still believe, I know we had to get a lot of praise for our centre-backs, but my personal opinion is that if I was picking a team for our lives and picking a team to go to the next level, I don't think our centre-backs are good enough. I really don't. I think we've got a problem at left-back. We could do two, and we've got one decent right-back. So there are bigger issues than 25-year-old Granit Xhaka, who plays every single game, and the week before, with Torreira, dominated the three-man Liverpool midfield, which is one of the second-best teams in the league. And I consider that to be a proper team that got to a Champions League final last season. And that's where you judge people against the very, very best. So I just think everything you're saying is correct, Elliot, on this game. But I just think there comes a point this game actually shows you where we need to improve.
Yeah,
it really shows you where our transfers need to be. And at least be a level of honesty about some of the players that we have that our coach is actually extracting a lot from. A lot more than I expected, to be honest. So I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah, and you know, there's a fair point philosophically, too, about how much tinkering, how much systemic change, how much, you know, structural change for each match is the right amount to be tactically astute, and how much is too much when it comes to disrupting the team's ability to develop any kind of flow. I mean, this is another match where the manager made a halftime sub and changed the system. And so you start a match in a certain system with a certain setup, and you have to try to get in your rhythm and figure out how that system can expose the opposition. And then at halftime, you change to a totally new system with a new group of players, and you have to start over trying to figure that out. And so, you know, it is definitely the case that under Arsene Wenger, we were calling for more tactics. Do tactics, Arsene. And now we have a manager who is definitely doing tactics, responding to game situations. And the question becomes, is he allowing the team to gel enough? And it's kind of ironic that we're kind of on the other side of the spectrum now with the questions that we're asking. And maybe that just makes me a moany cunt, which I hear everybody shouting, yes, that's the case. Look, I am not crestfallen. I was really disappointed by this performance, obviously, and result. It's a hard way to go into an interlull. It's especially tough with the rate at which, you know, other top five teams are picking up points. Thankfully, Manchester United not really keeping pace. So it's disappointing. I think the thing that's disappointing to me right now is just we have a lot of pretty talented players who I'm not sure we have an idea of how to get the best out of. And I'm not sure that you can get the best out of all of them. And I feel for Emery because Mkhitaryan, Iwobi, Ramsey, Ozil, Lacazette, Aubameyang, when you list all those names, that's a lot of talent. you can't play all those players, and you certainly can't play all those players in a way that gets the most out of them. Let's do this. Let's take a break to learn about lingerie. Let's take a break to hear Scott's statistics, then come back, talk about the second half, the change of system, who shined in the game, because I think there were some positives here that we can focus on, not the least of which is Leno, for better and worse, and we can wrap up, because we certainly don't need to moan about this for hours on end. So we will we'll sex it up a little bit. We'll get your romantic life sorted out, talk to Scott, and come back with more after this. Guys, this holiday season, how about giving your wife or girlfriend something totally different? Something romantic that celebrates the unique connection between you and her. I'm talking about a luxury gift service called Enclosed that delivers designer lingerie to your lady month after month. Enclosed is like a flower of the month or beer of the month, but instead of flowers, she gets surprised with ultra high-end lingerie. And this is seriously high-end stuff, the kind of quality that will really impress your lady. Enclosed was designed specifically to help guys find gifts for their wives. Enclosed is all about helping you make her happy. This fosters intimacy and closeness, and as someone who is married with a toddler, I can tell you this kind of thing is so important as a relationship grows over time. And Enclosed is effortless for you. Every month, Enclosed sends your wife or girlfriend a custom curated lingerie gift selected just for your lady, and they back the gift up with a 100% size guarantee so you never have to worry about fit. This is as easy and as satisfying as it gets. You can join more than 30,000 couples that love Enclosed, and I'll give you a little gift. Right now, you can get $35 off your Enclosed gift. Just go to enclosedlingerie.com. That's enclosedlingerie.com. Enter the code ARSENAL. Can't forget that one. Enter the code ARSENAL at checkout and get $35 off any Enclosed gift. Why not give your wife or girlfriend something that really reflects and deepens the connection between the two of you? Something that you would never give your mother. That's enclosedlingerie.com with the code ARSENAL for $35 off the best gift ever. Do it now. Okay, as promised, we now have Scott with us. Scott is on Twitter at @O_that_crab. You can read him doing the By the Numbers column for Ars Blog, as well as writing for The Short Fuse and many other places. In other words, he's just an exceptionally talented and intelligent man, which is exactly what this podcast needs. Scott, I have been shitting on Arsenal this podcast. It's unacceptable. It's inexcusable. I will repent for it later and say many, many Hail Marys. But now that we have the statistics, you can tell me how wrong I am to feel down about this performance, because the statistics show that it was a stormer, I am sure. So, on XG with the statistics, how great was this Arsenal performance?
You didn't let me yeehaw.
Oh, sorry. Scott's here. Hi, Scott.
Yeah.
All right. Good to have you. Now, how great was his performance? What did the stats say?
The stats said that it was bad, and Arsenal are bad, and that we should all feel bad for. I've spent 2 hours watching
oh,
that.
Oh shit! There it goes. There. Well, sorry, listener. We can't fix this. Whatever. We can try turning it off and turning it back on again. Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in? What does the XG say overall?
So I had Wolves at 2.7 and Arsenal at 1.22. Up until the last 15 minutes or so of the match, it was pretty even. Both teams were right about one, right under one, and then Wolves just absolutely tore Arsenal open there at the end, and almost added two XG to their total. This was probably one where Leno saved at least a goal in this match, maybe even two. It was just all sorts of bad for Arsenal's defense, and there was really nothing outside of the one Aubameyang chance where Arsenal created anything of note.
So, I guess the only question I would have then, though, is do you have some sympathy for the way the XG panned out, only in the sense that a lot of Wolves' chances came at a stage in the game when we were committing a lot of resources to trying to get all 3 points?
Yeah, and so this is where I think you can see score effects come into things. So Wolves scored early on one of their early chances that they did. And then from about the 20th minute on, they did absolutely nothing but defend. They were very good at it for most of that time. Arsenal could not break them down at all. But then Arsenal really started pushing forward, and it was just simple long balls over the top that absolutely killed Arsenal. Or, Traore being a beast and absolutely running through things. That was the only thing that really kind of just shook things up for us.
Okay, so let's get into individual performances. There were some that I liked. I liked Guendouzi in the second half, but overall, did anyone pop off the charts for you as having had a decent day for Arsenal?
So surprisingly for me, Ozil came through, rated really well with the offensive value added. I think we'll go ahead and caveat this in saying that Arsenal had a lot of the ball. Wolves sat really deep. They didn't really do a lot of pressing in midfield, so Arsenal had a lot of final third possession but couldn't do much more than that. So I think that a lot of Arsenal's offensive value added is going to come from racking up the passing stats where they weren't really contested. So it's going to be an interesting one to look at statistically wise based on that. So Ozil had a good game here. I had him actually at a plus 0.74 overall.
So what was he doing well that yields that? Just playing a lot of passes?
Yeah, so his passing overall was really good. So he had 11 final third entries of 13 attempts, 23 of 27 in the final third passing. His passing into the box was also not bad compared to other players. He had five attempts into the box, completing four of them. So of the players that were on the pitch, he was one of the few that actually really kind of completed the passes that he was given. So
he definitely did better than the players that weren't on the pitch, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well, they at least didn't have a chance to make a mistake.
Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of mistakes, Granit Xhaka did have a mistake. I mean, it's tough to evaluate. I kind of killed him a little earlier in the podcast. He played almost 100 passes at 90%. So he's still the hub of everything we do in building play, but he had that killer error. I mean, do you have some sympathy for him because, one mistake, and it's actually kind of two mistakes in one, summed up his day, or was his day on the whole not great? I mean, statistically, did he look better than maybe I'm giving him credit for?
It's a tough one to say if he was better than the one mistake. I mean, his overall offensive value was 0.38. It's a lot of the same story that we always talk about. Really good positive, but still too much in the negative side.
What are some of the things that count against him negative?
So a lot of the times it's his passes where he doesn't complete the ones that are in the midfield or the defensive third. So because he has so many of those, if they don't come off, they are going to count against him. So he was 22 of 23 in the defensive third and 46 of 51 in the midfield third. So just those couple passes, especially if they're central, those are dangerous ones to give up and to have, an interception go there or have something that's a loose pass because it's so easy for the other team to be able to break off of those balls that are misplayed.
You know what? It's funny. You just crystallized something in my mind, too, about why you have to really understand qualitatively what the statistics are telling you quantitatively. Because if I play 100 passes and 95 of them are accurate, and I'm a high-volume passer who completed 95% passes, you'd say, well, how can you say he was sloppy with the ball? But if the five incompleted passes were all on the edge of my 18 and all short passes that I misplaced, I've actually had a terrible game, right? Because I've given it to the opposition on the edge of my own 18 five times, which you can't do. So, you can be a high-volume, high-percentage passer, but it's where you miss your passes that can really determine whether you're helping or hurting your team.
Exactly. So, if you're going to, play a pass and it's right to the center circle and it's misplayed, that's a lot worse than, one that goes out of play for a throw-in.
Yeah, and that's why he's someone like Kolasinac, who was terrible. He completed 76% of his passes and, played poorly. You could argue when you misplace your passes out by the boundary and up the pitch a little, at least it doesn't immediately hurt you as much as someone who's right at the center of your midfield.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things when I was creating this stat that I wanted to try to get a little bit more information to be able to put a value on those kinds of misplays to be able to say that not all mispasses are the same.
But speaking of Kolasinac, he was terrible, wasn't he?
Yeah, this is something that is really kind of a culmination of his time at Arsenal, where he's pretty good going forward, but absolutely atrocious defending. And even in this game going forward, I was not impressed with what he could do. He really didn't seem to add much. He only, attempted one cross, or he attempted two crosses, completed one. It was, zero dribbles, zero chances created. Really just absolutely did nothing on his calling card of being an offensive-minded player, more of a wing back over a fullback kind of a thing. And then looking at the defensive side, was 0-for-4 on aerial duels, was dribbled past once. One of the things that I actually really did notice is that Wolves really did seem to single out him and Aubameyang on the right-hand side as Arsenal's wing point, with 55% of their attacks coming down the right. They are a right-handed sided biased team, but even this was a lot more than what they were before, where it was 42% of their attacks go down the right. So it was something that they saw probably in the game film, and they really took advantage of.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's a problem, right? Because if people understand that that's a weakness and they're able to exploit it, then it's something that we have to correct. And I think, you know, another big problem in this game is just that once we fell behind, we were pushing so much up to try to get back in the game and then ultimately try to win the game that we were left even more exposed. But in an effort to try to win the game, you know, we went to two up front in the second half. I don't know that it necessarily worked, but I'm not sure either striker or, you know, sort of striker, depending on how you see Aubameyang, played particularly well. Let's discuss those two briefly. For me, this was Aubameyang's worst match as an Arsenal player. I thought he was poor in build-up, looking really lost in that left wing position, and then obviously missed the big chance. So statistically, does this game look as anonymous from him as it did to me?
Yeah, so almost all of his value in this game came from his shot. So he had a 0.21 offensive value added, and the shot was worth 0.2. So everything outside of his one big chance was basically a zero, which is not surprising. Lacazette, even in this game, you know, we've talked about him being, you know, having a little bit more of a well-rounded game. And in this one, he was a 0.06 in the offensive value added. His passing was a negative overall. He was, you know, a little bit better in being able to move with the ball at his feet. But even then, it was, you know, 0.03. And then he had 0.03 with his shooting. So overall, it was just not a good game from either of our, you know, two most expensive players ever.
Yeah. Do you start to worry about Lacazette's form at the moment? I mean, statistically, I think he's fallen off quite a bit. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I think so. And I know I've been beating this drum over and over again, but I think Aubameyang is the guy that would be, I think you really can only play one of them in the team at a time. I don't think it works, at least from a plan A perspective. So I think you almost have to pick one as the striker, because especially in a match like this where Aubameyang just didn't do anything defensively to protect Kolasinac, and especially he's not very good defending, I think you need somebody there who can at least put in a decent job. You know, it doesn't have to be a defensive specialist, but, you know, an Alex Iwobi on the left protecting the left back is going to be a lot better than Aubameyang trying to protect the left back. And I think you're going to get more creative actions out of somebody else on that left wing over Aubameyang. And then it's, you know, a choice between which person do you want as striker between Lacazette and Aubameyang. And right now I think that Aubameyang is probably the better choice.
Yeah. And I mean, even if I were going to suggest that it's that he stick with Lacazette, I do agree with you completely that it really appears like it needs to be one of the two of them. I love it when they get closer to each other and can, you know, be involved with one another's movement and, you know, on the edge of the box, exchanging passes and stuff. It just isn't happening for them right now. And I do think Aubameyang owns some responsibility for that, because, you know, I thought this was the first game where maybe his head dropped a little bit. I mean, I know that gets into sort of the psychological stuff. You don't want to get too much into reading into it. But to me, I saw the first signs of sort of frustration with the role he's being asked to play. Maybe I'm reading something into that wasn't there. One player I do want to just touch on quickly is Guendouzi. I thought he was the best player on the pitch the second half for us, but I'm not sure that would have been picked up by any of the data, and if I'm just sort of wish-casting that. Did you see it as a good half performance?
Yeah, I thought he wasn't bad. I really don't think so. I mean, so he played 45 minutes, and he came on, and he had an offensive value added of 0.09. So overall in the day, that would be a 0.2, if you figure for a full 90 minutes. So that would be a very good game. His passing was again a little bit loose. Maybe he was trying a little bit too hard in this, so it's a tough one to get an eye on to figure out what exactly went on for him. But he was moving the ball well. He adds that little bit of impetus that isn't always there with the rest of the team. So to me, it's a important thing to have, and I really liked seeing him do that.
Okay, so as we head into the interlull now, always a good time to take stock. Just looking at sort of the XG table, we know where we are in the actual table, which is all that matters. But as far as, you know, what we talked for the last few weeks about regression, is regression coming? And maybe against Palace and against Wolves, we saw a little bit of that regression that we were worried about during the winning run when the performances weren't necessarily indicative of the results. So where are we now in the table? Not the actual table, but the XG table.
So right now, Arsenal are sitting right in the middle in 10th place. So I have them as a XG differential of 0.33. So they are right between Everton and Manchester United.
I mean, it's ironic, because if you told me we were between Everton and Manchester United before the season, I'd say, okay, we're probably in fifth. You know, but Everton and Manchester United are not in those positions right now. So it's a little difficult. I think... Would you say
just the caveat? This is the non-penalty XG difference. So mm-hmm. with the penalties, Arsenal would actually be negative.
Would be negative with penalties.
Yes.
For the season.
Yeah, for the season, because they have two penalties against and no penalties for.
Yeah, not ideal. I mean, let's put it this way: would you say you'll absolutely take our current position given the performances, and that it's a positive that we are where we are, having maybe not clicked the way we would have hoped yet?
Exactly. The alternative is to play well and be in a bad position, which I would not take. I mean, you want the points because, you know, you don't have to give the points back just because you played poorly. So given the choice, I would take the points. But I really like the performances to match the points that Arsenal have been able to accumulate.
You'll always take good outcome, but you'd prefer that it come with good process eventually, because that's more durable, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, Arsenal have kind of gone from playing poorly, getting 3 points, to playing poorly, getting 1 point. So I'm worried the next phase is playing poorly, getting 0 points.
Well, to be fair, on the bright side, we still have not lost a game in a long, long, long time. And not losing is a good thing. So long may that continue. And long may we continue to speak to Scott on the Arsenal Vision Postmatch Podcast. You can find him on Twitter at @O_that_crab. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. 2 more weeks without a loss.
2 more weeks without a loss is correct, but not for this podcast. This podcast can always take an L, and we will take several of them in our next section with Clive and Paul coming up right after this. Okay, we're back. Scott giving us the statistics you needed to really contextualize the performance, but I think that there's some tidbits here that we can dive into that are interesting. And Paul, the first one is just the halftime change. I don't know that I think Iwobi works great on the right, but I also don't know that taking him off made sense in the context of the problems we were having in the game and the scoreline. I found it a little confusing. So what did you think of the change and the system he switched to?
So I think it worked for about 10 minutes. We certainly, maybe it was just the energy after halftime. It seemed like Xhaka was sitting back a little bit. It was interesting. So I thought it was really interesting, to Clive's point. I mean, it is enjoyable to see us try different things and very different things and not leaving it to the last 20 minutes where it's just helter-skelter, though we did some of that too in this game. So here we had a controlled change in tactics at halftime. And if you ignore the result and the consequences of it, it was intellectually interesting to see what we did and how we played, with Xhaka sitting back a little bit, with Guendouzi and Torreira pushing forward. It was interesting to see Torreira as more of an attacking midfielder and see what he could do in terms of making things happen through balls and getting other people going. So that was kind of fun for me. Guendouzi was given a bit more cover to our left back, which was desperately needed, and freeing Aubameyang to be more attacking in the second half, which was strange because he had a lot less touches and a lot less involvement, unfortunately. You would have thought that would have got him on the shoulder of the last defender, but they were so compact and so deep, there was just no space for him to run into. And so, as you say, while it might have been a promising concept, it meant we went into the second half with them sitting deep, no need to come at us except on the counter, us getting even more of the share of possession because we had three midfielders, but nobody to dribble and nobody to get in behind. We didn't have it on the right and we didn't have it on the left. No dribblers, nobody to get in behind. And after high energy first 10 or so minutes, we kind of got into a stalemate with them. And it needed the next tactical change to come on a little later.
Yeah, I think the big problem, again, is, you know, when you make a change at halftime like that that's so substantial, not just the swap of player, but the swap of system, then you have the problem of needing to give it time to see if it works, you know, if it can yield the results you want. And so you can't make that 60-minute swap. You know what I mean? You can't you can't go to a new system and 15 minutes later change it again. Yeah, you have to give it some time. And so that's why I think his other subs came on later. Clive, I want to talk about Lacazette just quickly because my feeling is that his form has started to dip. You know, and to be fair, you're not going to knock everything you touch into goal every time. But I'm not sure that the contribution, the buildup, or the end product is really there at the moment. And I'm just curious to get your sense of whether you agree that this game was sort of a disappointing outing from him, and if maybe you'd be looking to get him some rest for a little bit to try Aubameyang up front, or if you're perfectly content with what he's doing.
I'm not really content with either at the moment, but it's just, we came back to a Danny Welbeck problem, isn't it? I mean, there was occasions when Welbeck would start a game and you'd say, that's a bit surprising. But then Aubameyang would come back in, or Lacazette would come back in, and they would be fresh. I just felt they're a little bit tired at the moment. They're not quite as sharp. That combination and chemistry that we saw in the season is not quite there. I really do think when Aubameyang got took off the other day and he was a bit upset, I'm watching that one closely, Elliot, I've got to be honest with you, to see if he's really upset and is now a little bit more concerned about where he fits in the pecking order. I think I'm not against, and I'm going back on the system a little bit slightly, but I'm not against changes in the system, because that means the manager's got people watching the game and he understands the game and he's fixing what he sees is broken and he's reacting to it rather than waiting until we go, you know, 2-0 down to react to it. I quite like that, and that to me suits how I like to see football. I'm really concerned about the depth in our squad at the moment in certain areas. I think we've got a problem attacking-wise, and we're starting to see we've got two meals of the same type, so we can't change things up. And, you know, it's just one player losing Danny Welbeck, but he was such an important player to allowing us to lay down power and speed for the entire 90 minutes. So when Lacazette or Aubameyang is a little bit off after minute 60, it's no problem. We just bring on Danny Welbeck and he just brings on more speed and he just makes sure that the energy and intensity is kept at a high level, or we keep them all on. And I think we're going to really miss him, and I just don't know how we're going to replace him. And what this has, it has an effect on both Lacazette and Aubameyang and their freshness. And I was disappointed to see Lacazette get called up to the French squad, because I was hoping he'd get a little bit of a rest. I shouldn't be saying that, right? Because all fair play to him. But I was actually thinking, great, get a bit of a rest in national break. We've got a few people that don't quite make it into the squad. But now our form's improving. A few of them are getting pulled into the squad. So that's a little bit of a shame. But I'm a little bit concerned about the squad depth. And I think January is important, and what we do, how we react. Because I just feel, you know, to rely on Eddie to back these guys up, and I think it's the problem. Eddie's a promising kid, and that's what he is, he's a kid. But he's the next off the rank, right? So,
plus, they haven't given him any bridging games to get there. I mean, even if capable.
Yeah, I mean, he's been frozen out of the Europa League and Carabao Cup squads.
Hasn't had a minute.
So you can't now suddenly throw him in the deep end of the Premier League. And, you know, I think the problem for Lacazette is just that he is sort of a 9.5 in the way he plays for us, and the linking play isn't really coming off for him right now. Maybe some of that is Aubameyang's just not getting close enough to him. You know, I mean, there have been games when they've both played and they've gotten kind of close to each other, and you've seen the relationship on the pitch, and there were some moments in the final third in this game where he was trying to flick it on to Aubameyang, and Aubameyang was trying to, you know, lay the ball off to him, and then they were playing dummies to each other, and none of it really came off. And some days it just doesn't happen for you. You know, those little flicks and tricks come off some days, and some days they don't. But I think if you can't get the two of them close together, then I think you have to just make them rotational options for one another and ride the hot hand, so to speak. I feel for Emery again. I keep saying this, but why did we buy Aubameyang? Why didn't we sell Ramsey? You know, you look at the squad and you say, no matter how much I love Aubameyang, no matter how much I love Ramsey, and he's been a player that I did like. If those guys, you know, if Ova hadn't been bought, if Ramsey had been sold, if that money had been invested in true, young, talented wide players and one more really dynamic box-to-box midfielder, I mean, how much different could we look and feel in that situation? And so he's been handed a team full of 30-year-olds that really cries out to win now, that's terribly imbalanced. And so he's got to try to find a way to balance building for the future with a squad that's not exactly built for the future. And that is not easy. And I have a lot of sympathy for that situation. And he's got a lot of big egos because 30-year-olds have those big egos and expect to play every game. And he's got to balance that too. So that's tough. Paul, I think when the substitutions came later, they unfortunately didn't really work. The one that is ironic is Mkhitaryan gets the goal, but also had another really, really poor performance. And this is a player I thought would be a really big player for us this season. I was actually really excited to see a front line that was maybe Lacazette, Mkhitaryan, and Aubameyang. But he, for whatever the reason, does not seem to be able to get it going right now. I mean, goal aside, and I know, again, saying goal aside is a little silly, but I don't think he meant to score with that. Was this just another worrying effort from Mkhitaryan for you?
I mean, I guess it was. It seems like we're hammering everybody and everything. I didn't think we were... See, the thing is, I don't think we were that terrible overall. I think they were particularly good. But when you start to pick through it, it just sounds like you've an issue with everybody. Well, actually, sounds like you've an issue with everybody.
Well, that's always... It also sounds like... Can I just say one thing about that, too? Look, I think a lot of it stems from going down early, being behind early, because... Of course they sat deeper, and of course they played on the counter, and that is a problem. When you do that at home to a small team, you know what those games get to be like. But I just thought the precision and execution of a lot of the players in this game was below par, below expectation, and Mkhitaryan was really sloppy.
He was. So to your point, I guess the problem is you picked another good example. I thought, you know, I'm a Mkhitaryan fan, so he comes on, I'm like, all right, come on, Henrik, let's see what you can do. And the first thing he does is he loses the ball, and the second thing he does is lose the ball, and the third thing he does is loses the ball. And pretty much the fourth thing he does is put in a perfect cross, which, as far as I'm concerned, is well worth a goal. Call it a fluke if you like, but he did exactly what you're supposed to do.
It's a brilliant ball. Yep.
It's a brilliant ball that is perfectly hit so that if everybody misses it, it's still right in the spot where it could either go in or Lacazette can get his toe on it in the last moment. And it's like a millimeter off feckin' Aubameyang's head, who could have screwed everything up by connecting. But if he'd got any touch on it, it should have been in too. So fuck it. Absolutely perfect cross. So one brilliant moment. Outside of that, he was kind of rubbish until that point. But also he was playing from the left, which is kind of strange because his success has been connecting with Bellerin on the right. So, as Emery says, we're gathering information at the moment. I'm not sure everybody else feels the same way, that that's the phase we're in where every game is data and input and information. Obviously, we're ready for things to start clicking. And the problem when they have clicked, as they did against Liverpool, is everybody thinks it's off to the races, two steps forward, no steps back. And this was two steps forward, two steps back. So as Clive cautioned, you know, we're kind of at where we're at. He's got the players he's got. I fully support his view that, you know, we're trying different things and that's all good. We've all wanted some different tacticking, but he's also got to balance the fact that he does actually need results. The club needs results. He needs results. He needs results for buy-in. So it's that very difficult balance of wanting to do the right things and move forward and develop a style and a character, etc., while needing to keep the results going. And this could have been a great weekend had we got this result with Chelsea taking kind of missing a couple of points. Instead, we went and missed a couple of points too. So it's just the difficulty of the manager coming in, knowing everybody says you need 18 months, you need 3, maybe 4 windows, and he's kind of had none or half a window, but he still gets to be judged on it, and we're at where we're at. He's got a lot of good players. He's got to find something that works for everybody more often.
But. And that's the problem, is finding what works for everybody, and I, you know, I just keep returning to it. I think he's going to ultimately, what if we wind up being frustrated this season and not getting into the top four, which may happen, and it's not the end of the world. I mean, there's a lot of rebuilding to do here. I think it will be because we're never able to find a way to fit this jigsaw together just right with the caliber of talent we have all occupying similar positions. I will tell you what I'm not excited to see anymore is outswinging Granit Xhaka corners from the left-hand side. We had 11 corner kicks. I don't think any of them were particularly good. That is one disappointment, because we'd seen some really good set pieces over the last couple of weeks, and I thought this was a step back in terms of our corner kick routines. Clive, let's spend some time praising some people. I think there was certainly some performances here that warranted. I thought Torreira was really, for the most part, pretty fantastic. For the things that he was asked to do, I thought Leno was obviously spectacular, making saves that kept the point safe. But I want to just talk about Guendouzi for a minute. I thought in the second half, during the period where he was on the pitch, he was our best player. I think he really drove us forward. He can step up in the midfield with the ball at his feet. He's not scared to have the responsibility. You see him remonstrating with players when they get it wrong. You see that he has that big personality to want the ball and want to make a difference. I was really encouraged by this performance. I mean, do you feel similarly?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a saying, you can't stop talent. And this guy is so good that the manager used him to fix a problem. And then he went to a 3 in midfield. And yeah, if we're going to grow up to be a proper adult team and play proper adult football, I'd like to see us move to a more of a 3 in midfield and not so much pressure on 2. But that's just a personal like. And I think these guys...
Problem is, you can't do it with Mesut Ozil. I mean, that's really the issue.
Well, let's have a discussion.
I'm open to it. I mean, you find another place for him.
Let's have a discussion. I mean, we tried the diamond this foot. We tried the diamond. It didn't quite happen. But the team screams. It screams diamond, doesn't it? If you really want to accommodate people and get your two strikers on the pitch at the same time, it does scream 3 in, 1 free, 2 up. That's what it says, right, with the talent that we have. And that allows us to progress the ball. Then we are very reliant on our number 10 being the special player of the day, because he's the link. So if you want to stop that, you just put 3 people on him and suddenly we lose 2 forwards. Right, so it's very risky. And I think Guendouzi really is just smashing his way through the dressing room. He just is taking everybody apart and making people think, my goodness, can we leave this guy out? At the moment, he's 12th man. But if we're not careful, what I'm saying, if some certain midfielder is not careful, he's going to take their role. Right? He's not far away. He really isn't far away. And that's the way it should be. When someone arrives like that, what you got to do is you got to rip the shirt off people's backs. And that's what he's doing. And he's forcing us to look at Mkhitaryan, look at Ozil. Many already looked past Ramsey. Some people are starting to look at Xhaka and wonder about what you're doing, because you made a mistake, mate. So you're under the spotlight. And he's forcing his way in. Right? So I can't speak highly enough of him. And it's all in context, I know. But consider that he's probably only been to the Emirates about 15 times in his life. Every away game he goes to is a new location for him, a new journey, a new ground. And he's just stepping onto the pitch and saying, I'm going to have it with you. And this is what I'm going to do. Give me the ball. Let's get started. I think he's going to be a very special player for us. And by next season, he will not be on the bench in any which way or form.
I mean, do you think that there's an argument for that too, if we're going to play 4-2-3-1, to be Guendouzi and Torreira? I mean, as much as you like Xhaka?
I like Xhaka. I do. I like Guendouzi and I like Torreira, right? So 3 for 2, absolutely great. That's exactly what we need. That's exactly what we can't do up front at the moment. We've got 2 for 2.
Yeah.
And then that's a worry. I'm never worried about having 1 or 2 extra players. It's more when we don't have that depth and we're watching players fade and we can't change things up. That concerns me. So I never worry about picking the 11. I like to have, like, 3 for 2 positions all over the pitch if I can. And if they're good, and we don't drop off, then that's perfect.
So let me ask you something, Clive, and I have to let you know, by the way, Paul has had to drop off for life/work reasons. So Paul's on Twitter at Positive My Pants, and we thank him for putting up with me this long. I assume he's dropped off because this hasn't been as upbeat as he would prefer a podcast to be, which, to be fair, it's not really been as upbeat as I would prefer a podcast to be. Let me ask you this, actually, Clive. Before, I was going to ask you kind of a fun hypothetical, and I promise I will get to it, but I just want to ask you sort of a meta supporter question. You know, I was on Twitter doing what I do, which is kind of complaining a little bit. And you know, if that surprises anybody, I don't know why. I just kind of do that. That's kind of me. But the one encouraging thing you could say, or annoying thing, depending on your perspective, is nobody seems to have any patience right now for any critique or criticism of the team. It's sort of like, get the fuck out with that. It's a process. Shut up. We'll be fine. Like, it really does seem at this moment that everybody is very, very, very committed to the idea of patience, of, you know, long-term planning, of staying behind Emery. And I think that's a good thing. Now, I think you should still be able to criticize performances, setups, systems, because that's part of the fun. Part of the fun is discussing this stuff. But, I mean, do you agree that in general right now it seems like the overall sort of zeitgeist in Arsenaldom is to want to be patient and want to give this time and to not really get too critical of the process?
Yeah, I think there is, and it's all to do with the fact that for the last 3 years we've been totally divided as a fan group around the manager, and for some that have been more vociferous than others around removing Wenger from the club, there must be a piece of them saying, you know what, I don't want to be defined as someone that just continually moans about the managers. When the next manager comes in, I'm going to try my harder to support him. And a lot of people, you know, people like to be right. You know, they like to be right about things. So they want Emery to succeed. They're, as a fan, they're doing their job to help create an atmosphere where he can succeed. I think the change in crowd behaviour is quite interesting. I mean, at the start of the season, I felt when I went to a game, I felt there was still the same old suspects being criticised heavily. And I thought it was quite unintelligent. I wish I'd gone to Liverpool game, and that's the game I really regret not going to, because there seems to be a change in the crowd, much more supportive. And I think the club used that game, they targeted that game to really establish themselves and really make a mark on the league. Didn't quite get the win because we conceded early, but we walked away with a performance and confidence that said we are here by right. We stumbled a bit since then. I do think the fullback injuries have really, really hurt us, hurt our fluidity. But the crowd they're with this guy, and I am too. I really am, because I think he is focused on football matches, and I feel the club has lost its way when it comes to football. I think we were far more interested in being this contrary club that was defined in one man's image. And now we have a structure, a much more professional club structure, and we have a very professional coach that really targets the green grass and the football, and he's prepared to make tactical changes to achieve goals. I think fans can see it. The guy's trying. And where your points were earlier, which I think were really well-founded, we have a team of quite experienced, highly paid players that he has got to do something with. He's got to motivate and get them moving, get them running, and try to get them to be more consistent. I cannot wait for January. I don't want to wish my life away, but I cannot wait for January. I do believe it's going to be not a quiet January, and I almost can't wait for the summer, because when the summer comes, I think we're going to see a lot more about what he likes as a player, and where we're going, and how we're going to reshape our wage bill and our squad shape. And I think then, Elliot, when you say the words the Emery system, I think it'll be a valid comment, because I think we can at least see Emery players by then, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, any system you want to implement, I mean, find me a coach who's going to take two really good nines and three really good tens and four really good eights and build a team with it. I mean, that's kind of what he's been tasked with. And I look
he's
at Manchester.
He's done a great job, isn't he?
I think he has. But I look at Manchester City, and I look at Liverpool, and I look at Chelsea, and I see players like Sterling and Sané and Mahrez and Mane and Salah, yes, and Eden Hazard. And we don't have that. We don't have that initiator. We don't have that instigator, that player who can put a defender on a back foot and force them to react and create openings. Iwobi can do a little of it. But what's so funny is, to me, it is a flaw that a player as young and still in a developing process as Iwobi has become an absolutely instrumental part to what we want to do, because he's the only player with the set of characteristics that he has in the entire squad. That can't be right.
Yeah.
It can't be right that you have players on $350,000 a week and $200,000 a week and $150,000 and $180,000 and $220,000, and none of them have that skill set. That can't be right. And so, you know, I think that is a really, really big problem for the way the squad is constructed.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And let's have our hindsight discussion now. The weekend, Iwobi came off. I didn't think you did anything wrong. Now, why couldn't Iwobi go?
Can I ask you a question just real quick on that point, and then you can expand on that? But if egos had nothing to do with it, if status had nothing to do with it, do you think he would have taken off Aubameyang and moved Iwobi left and brought Mkhitaryan on right?
What I would have done, because don't forget, game state says we were 1-0 down. What I would have done, he was obviously trying to fix a problem. He was obviously trying to, you know, add some energy in the centre midfield, because he was a bit concerned about our space on our left back. So he wanted to have a V in there, and he wanted to try to create a little bit more stability. But then he kept us at the 10, and I know that he had a fantastic game recently. But in hindsight, I would have pushed Iwobi in there. I would have pushed Iwobi inside. I would have tried to travel through small spaces with dribbling speed and use his dribbling in compact areas to really make them back off. And again, it's a hindsight call. At the end of the game, you know, if Ozil puts one on someone's head and we win, then I wouldn't be saying that, right? So it's purely hindsight. But again, you talk about egos and status. No one thought that Ozil was coming off. And I don't want to... I'm not pinpointing him, but these are the days when your striker's a little bit flat that you hope that Ozil can come up and create a spark amongst them. It didn't quite happen. It wasn't just him. It was a collective thing where I felt we were a little bit tired, a little bit lacked in freshness. We weren't quite as fluid. And when that happens, you turn around and look at your big players and see what they do. And so Xhaka, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Lacazette, Aubameyang. You've mentioned them all. And that's what we do as fans. We don't quite get the result that we want. We look at our big players and we give the younger players like Guendouzi, Torreira, we give them a break because they're new and they're fresh. And but what we're seeing here is just that we're starting to see the limits. And I'm really concerned about the Christmas period because there is no recovery time. There isn't the ability to add more offensive power from the bench. And this is going to be a real test of Arsenal, not Emery's Arsenal, of Arsenal Football Club in the current squad construct that we have. And so we're going to need players to come out of the woodwork and really step up. People like Maitland-Niles, for example, I expect him to step up and really do something. We need Iwobi to continue his form and stay injury-free. We need more from Ozil. And we're going to probably have to play one striker to make sure the other striker can come in and add some freshness, because no striker can play every minute of every game. So he's got a real challenge coming up, Elliot, in the month of December. And we play Tottenham twice and Manchester United, so this is not the time to take a step back, because maybe that patience will wear a little bit thinner.
Yeah, and I hope not. I mean, this is the thing, right? I mean, I can complain about this performance because I think it warrants complaining about, but that doesn't mean I'm like jumping ship and think they're all horrible cunts who should be sacked. I mean, it is totally.
I can hear people shouting 16 games unbeaten.
Yeah, I get it.
And that's where we are.
And what I would shout back, I guess, right, is, and I'd like to think I've always been consistent about this. Bad process that yields good outcome is not, I mean, ultimately outcome is what matters most. So if you won the league with 38 bad performances, I'd take it. But long term, we know that bad process will eventually wind up yielding consistently bad outcomes. And so I'd like to see the process improve, because I believe in our ability to achieve good outcomes more when the process looks more convincing. Is that fair? I mean, that feels fair.
Yeah, we're on the path, right? So if you look at our goalkeeper at the weekend, and you look at Torreira, and you look at Guendouzi, right now we're happy with all of them. Would you agree? So they are three of the five signings we made in the summer, and those three players are very young with huge upsides, and they are growing as assets. You look at Iwobi, another one that's growing in a fast rate or not, right? So you know, we've stabilized with Bellerin. I think we found a third centre back in the club in Holding. I think he's defined himself as an Arsenal squad centre back, and some people say he's a first centre back. I would like to see us up that position level significantly, and so Holding would be the third one off, and we go younger again behind him. But so we're starting to develop that player, and we've got a few things to do, and we need to be brave to do them. You know, the Ramsey situation seems to be resolving itself. Mkhitaryan's got some work to do. Is Aubameyang secure at Arsenal in this current system? I'm not so sure, right? Or does China await? We'll soon find out. But I hope not, because we've got the player, we paid for the player, and I think he brings a lot to the club. But we're going to find out in the next year about who really constitutes an Arsenal player and who doesn't. But if you're going to focus on recruitment, and you mentioned City and Liverpool earlier, let's just talk about their spend. It's significant. You know, we're talking north of 400 million each. I know they got some resales, and we've been terrible. But then you look at Guendouzi, 7-8 million, right? And I wouldn't swap him for any of the Liverpool midfielders, right? So, and you look at Torreira, we wouldn't swap him for James Milner or Henderson, would we? And they were well sourced at a good price. If you are smart on recruitment, you can do a lot. We've been sloppy on recruitment. We've been sloppy at resales. So we've got some work to do. And so we are totally Sven dependent over the next year or so. And it's going to be interesting to watch.
We've got an international break. We come back and we get into a really tricky period. I mean, Bournemouth away won't be easy, not to mention the Spurs and United games back to back after a trip to the middle of nowhere. If I had to say to you, let me ask you it this way. What is something you'd like to see us get right, you know, in the next couple of games to feel good in going into those Spurs and United games? I mean, what is the thing that you think Emery most needs to get figured out for us to be a little more consistent, a little more reliably producing the right process, let alone outcome?
I think this break's come at a really good time. I really think the squad needs it. And it's a great time to reset. I think if I was him, I would be sitting down with a few of those 30-year-olds, shall we say, and I will be demanding a bit more of them to have impact when it counts in those games that we're all looking forward to, but a little bit of trepidation about as well. And I'm afraid we need to find some depth in the squad. We need someone to get hot. You know, we need Eddie to get hot in one of these Europa League games for his confidence. And he needs to be able to come off the bench, and if it's in a wide position, but we need something there. I think we need something for Maitland-Niles as well to potentially give Bellerin some rest time at right back, or come on as an impact wide player and really add something. So he's got to change his game slightly and add some more proactive energy to be the player that we all think he can be. And this is the time for them to step up now. They've had a great introduction to the team last year, and we need them to come back and really do something now and be treated as a senior first team player. Right? So that's what I'm looking for. I don't think Emery can do much more than what he has done. I think tactically he's been an eight or nine out of ten. He sees things, he reacts to things, he gets some right, 80-90% of the time, as far as I'm concerned, the results are saying that as well. But in the end, I think he's hamstrung. I don't think the squad's right. I think you'd agree. It's just not where it should be, but that's not his fault. So we are back to our two forwards find a spark, because the two forwards scoring goals has made us ahead of where we should be, and we should be focusing on those two guys. Let's get that spark back amongst you two. Let's get that going. And if we get that going, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, well said. I think it's a good place to wrap up. I think there are things to be encouraged about. Guendouzi, Torreira, Leno, all good in this game. I think there are worries. Where does Aubameyang fit in? He's too talented to not be contributing. And you could say he's contributed with 7 goals, but you know what I mean. And the performances are maybe not there right now in this system. I would hope between now and sort of this really, really critical period that Emery makes a decision about who he wants to start at center forward, and whichever guy he picks, even though I don't think he's a consistent player and I'm not sure he's at the absolute top level yet, I think Iwobi has to just own that left wide forward position for now. If we're going to stick with the 4-2-3-1, I think we need him over there for all the reasons we've repeatedly indicated. which means it's Mkhitaryan or Ramsey probably on the right. Maybe try Mesut Ozil over there, although that's been a real problem for getting Bellerin involved. But I think it has to be Iwobi on the left side of that front three. And hopefully we get Nacho Monreal back because Kolasinac is not an Arsenal player. So, you know, there's work to be done. I think we come into this interlull having to say we are reasonably satisfied with the point total we picked up to this point in the season, if not necessarily the consistency of performance. But, you know, in a growing period, in a learning process, you'll take getting points while you're going through growing pains, and that's what we've done. So good for that. We've got a 250th episode coming up. We're going to have a very special episode hopefully planned for you for next week as our 250th. We'll sort of look back on the season so far with some special guests, and hopefully all the regulars will be here as well. We have Granit Xhaka in the spotlight later this week. Interesting timing for that, coming off a stormer against Liverpool and then maybe a bit of a stinker against Wolves. So Granit Xhaka in the spotlight over on Patreon. We'd be delighted if you would sign up for our Patreon. And if you don't, we're still delighted to have you. We love you. We are sorry for the slightly down tone of this podcast. Certainly, I'm a huge contributor to that, but can only call it like I see it, friends. That's really all I can do. So in any event, we very much look forward to talking in the next podcast. Clive's on Twitter, @ClivePAFC. Thank you, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Give us a 5-star review and write nasty things about me. Write them about me, because I know you're willing to do it. I know you're itching to do it, but give us a 5-star review while you're doing it, because the other guys deserve the 5 stars. Me, you know, write the nasty stuff. I get it. It's cool. In any event, we love you. We will talk to you after... Actually, you know what? No, there's no game until we talk to you next. So we will just talk to you for our very special 250th gala episode featuring a galaxy of stars. That's all coming up next week. Talk to you next.